Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Guys in Tights podcast. This is Dustin. I'm here with Rob. It's been a while since we've gotten a pod out. You know, Rob's busy, new job, living in Charlottesville, caught up in the life. Rob, how are you doing? Tell the people what's going on.
Good as always, man. Yeah, Charlottesville life is pretty fun. It's definitely a change of pace from that DC life mm-hmm. that you're still kind of living.
Yes.
But yeah, it's been good, man. It's been good. Unfortunately, I've only been able to get to one basketball game, but hopefully okay. We'll change that coming up and get to some lax games. We're going to have some fun this spring.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. It'll be a good time. I think that, you know, the lacrosse games you can definitely get to. You know,
oh, yeah.
cheap grass tickets definitely get you going. But basketball might be tough. We'll see if JPJ actually starts to fill up a little bit after a big win over Duke on Saturday. Speaking of which, Rob, have you noticed the poor turnout that some people have talked about, like while watching the TV or actually at a game?
I definitely have. I mean, compared to the crowds when we were in school, it's different. It's lighter. But, you know, you have the pandemic going on still.
Yeah.
You know, the only game I've been to so far this season was the Louisville game, and that was still when they didn't have food or drink sales. So,
yeah,
it's just a different environment.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. I didn't think about that. But I guess it's just like the team isn't or wasn't as exciting as before. I think a lot of people counted this team out, you know, losing some bad games early on and dropping some other games by a lot too, just kind of turned everyone away kind of. But, you know, winning at Duke in Cameron Indoor on a buzzer beater, I think it kind of buzzed everyone up. And now there's all this talk within the UVA community about UVA, do we have a chance at the NCAA tournament? So to start off, I think, Rob, if you're okay with it, I want to do some bubble talk because we haven't been on the bubble since our senior year of high school, which was 2012-2013, back when Joe Harris beat Duke, that 33-point game in JPJ. But before we get started, I do want to talk about our sponsor from Sports Drink. Today's episode of Guys in Tights is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or on social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open up Instagram and type in @sportsdrink. It's spelled like sports drink without the vowel. So if you're going to Instagram @sprtsdrink, all we ask is that you close the door behind you. We're trying to not let the funk out.
UVA football is the softest bunch of cream puffs, bow tie wearing, brie cheese eating, NASCAR wearing wussies I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to punch people from UVA right in the neck. They wear suits to games. That's absurd.
All right, Rob, let's do some bubble talk. So before the Duke game, UVA was squarely out. Like, there was no talk of UVA making the tournament. It was kind of like, seemed like a wash. People were calling for some of the younger guys to be played more. It's just like a, you know, shoot the season away kind of deal, get them some experience. But now, you know, we beat Duke. We only play eight guys against Duke. I forget that Poindexter played so much in that game. But it seems like the rotation's tight, and it seems like Tony's kind of figured out his rotation and how he wants players to play, and it seems to be working. Rob, how do you feel about the team seemingly finally finding its footing so late in the season? Like, do you have hope at this point?
Hope is dangerous, man. I think we all know that.
I know.
Yeah, no, I do have a bit of hope. And, you know, looking at this schedule, Virginia hadn't strung together consecutive wins before this past week since January 1st and January 4th, where they won against Syracuse, they won against Clemson. And then for the 8 games since then, they traded wins and losses, just back to back to back to back and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So now here we are, a win against Boston College that, you know, wasn't dominant, but it was a fairly comfortable margin, 67-55. Virginia beats Miami pretty soundly. The final score, you know, just putting the walk-ons in at the end, doesn't mm-hmm. quite reflect how well UVA played. And then any win you get at Cameron Indoor against Duke, you take it. And Virginia looked good. I mean, I think I was one of many people that kind of wrote off that game. I had pretty low expectations coming into it, and mm-hmm. Virginia delivered. And I mean, I was really proud to support that team that night.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got a little bit of hope now. I would say probably the past two wins have been the two strongest wins of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia, you know, you got to be wary of the letdown game this Saturday at Georgia Tech, but that's a game UVA should win.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of in the final stretch there, but you've got a puncher's chance closing the season. Virginia Tech, Miami, Duke, Florida State, and Louisville.
Yeah,
and that's a tough stretch. Don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. I mean, that's as tough a stretch as they've had this season, probably. But you know, you feel more confident coming in to this game after this past 3-game stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but when we did the season preview, I actually pointed out to this last 5-game stretch is like the most important. And I actually kind of got it wrong. I said that Miami was going to be the bad one, but it's in Miami, so it's tough. And that Florida State and Louisville were going to be better. And of course, that's not true. Florida State just lost to Pitt at home, and Louisville is in chaos. I have no idea what's going on with Louisville. They're just, I feel like they don't exist anymore, really. And of course, Duke's in there. We have Duke at home, and then Tech at Tech in Blacksburg, in the castle. It's just, you know, always awful. And then, so those five are really tough. And then Georgia Tech too. But I'm not, like, frankly, not very worried about Georgia Tech. And I say that now, and it'll probably bite
me. Knock on wood.
Yeah, I know. I think I just jinxed us. But, you know, looking at the last 6 games of the regular season, you have to feel pretty good about UVA's chances. Now, unfortunately, I don't think there's a lot of wiggle room here in terms of getting into the tournament from our ACC wins. Beating Duke is great, and I think a lot of people are pointing to that being like, you know, UVA deserves to be in. We beat Duke. We beat this great team. But we also have some bad losses in the beginning of the season, and frankly, some bad losses in the middle of the season too. And so this team, I think, still has to win out in order to even feel moderately comfortable being on the bubble.
And if they don't win out, they probably have to go 5-1, and that loss better be mm-hmm. a loss against Duke.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think it is important to ground this conversation a little bit because, yeah, we're talking bubble, and I think Twitter and the message boards, everyone got excited about the bubble after the Duke win, and, you know, rightfully so. They strung together 3 wins, like we said earlier, Miami, Duke, those were probably the 2 best performances of the season. But I think to ground this conversation, you know, UVA is still on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. And it's not like even in the first 4 out or the next 4 out, as Lenardi likes to say. Mm-hmm. Virginia's not there yet. I think there's probably a path to get there. But, you know, Virginia's got to take care of business. And even if they take care of business, you know, who knows, maybe they lose first round of the ACC tournament and mm-hmm. things go south. But, you know, there's a path to get there, but UVA is not there yet, which I think is important as we kind of have this conversation to at least recognize.
Yeah. And, you know, just looking at the rest of the schedule, I think it's doable, especially because we've beaten four of those teams already. We've already beaten Tech, we've beaten Miami, we've beaten Duke, and we've already beaten Louisville. However, three of those wins were at home, you know, Tech, Miami, Louisville. Duke was on the road, though, so having Duke in Charlottesville is a huge boost. I think if we beat Duke twice, I would feel pretty good.
As long as you take care of business in the other game.
Exactly. I think if we, I think that losing at Tech or at Miami might not sink us. I think losing against Georgia Tech or Louisville might destroy us. Or even Florida State. Florida State is 6-7 in the ACC, and they're 13-10 overall. Louisville too. Louisville's 5-9 in the ACC, 11-13 overall. These teams are not great. I think Florida State and Louisville are both probably needing to win the ACC tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. And meanwhile, UVA, you know, we've been given this chance by the hard work that this team has put in towards the end of the season. But we're also in this position because we lost some games in the beginning of the season that we shouldn't have. You know, look at Navy, lost by 8 at home. At JMU, lost by 3 on the road, only scored 49 points. Probably the worst game of the season that we've played. But, you know, we've been given this opportunity. I do think that at the moment, we're not there yet. We're going to need a couple more wins before we turn the heads of guys like Lenardi or the guy that I like, the guy who runs Bracketville. He's great. He's got us at 79 right now.
Yeah, and you know, looking at the rankings just kind of across the board, that's generally where, you know, we land. KenPom, which is not used for NCAA tournament purposes, but KenPom has Virginia 74. The net rankings, which, you know, we've looked at the net rankings before for like seeding, but this is the first time since the net rankings have been in existence that we're looking at it in terms of being in the tournament or not. The net ranking has UVA at 80th right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where Virginia has to get, realistically, you probably have to get, you know, top 35 or so. And then you kind of hope that you're able to hang your hat on a couple big wins, like the Duke win earlier this season. Because you remember the field of 64 and now 68. About half of that is auto qualifiers, you know, auto bids from winning the tournaments. Now, that is the other path UVA has to making the NCAA tournament, is to win the ACC tournament. But I think right now the focus is just trying to win each and every game, because it is an uphill climb to get there.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about winning the ACC tournament. I just want to focus on beating Georgia Tech right now, because any of those losses, I think, right now is really gonna, we would need to win the tournament to get in. Looking at the net rate, you mentioned the net rankings. I want to take a look at them and where the other teams are that we have left to play, right? Georgia Tech right now is at 154 in the net rankings. Losing to them would be awful. NC State, 131, and, or sorry, not NC State, Louisville is 121, and Florida State's 93. Both of those, any of those losses would be pretty bad. Miami at 72 and Virginia Tech at 43. Those are better and would be good road wins. Duke at number 11 would be a great win no matter what. So, you know, once again, not a lot of room for error in the last six games. And to be quite frank, this team has not been super consistent throughout the season. As you mentioned earlier, after our two wins against Syracuse and Clemson, we go loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win for eight games, right? It didn't seem like we've really found our groove for a while. And so, yeah, it's been tough to get a hold on this team. And finally, we get three wins in a row, two wins against really good teams, or better teams. And there's some hope. And as you said, that hope is dangerous. Hope is dangerous. But I'm starting to believe a little bit more in this team and what they can do. Just seeing them destroy Duke inside made me really, actually pretty confident that they can do this.
Yeah, and let's talk about that just a little bit, because I think so far to start this episode, we've really focused on where Virginia is in the broader college basketball landscape and mm-hmm. how they fit into the bubble talk. But, you know, on the court, they're winning. At least they've won the past three games, which has kind of catapulted us to have this talk even. Mm-hmm. So what have you liked about this UVA team the past three games? You know, obviously we're kind of fresh off the Duke win. We kind of know how that happened. Virginia kind of neutralized some of Duke's stars, mm-hmm. Really dominated the paint. We're only 2 from 12 from three. But, you know, are there any other trends you've picked up on in the past three games that you like and you think have helped carry this team to where they are now?
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy that we're in the paint so much. And one thing that I've really noticed, and I'm sure a lot of people have noticed too, Caden Shedrick has really stepped up in the second half of the year. Ever since getting benched as a starter for Cafaro instead, I think the tone has changed for this team coming out of the gate. And if you look at what Cafaro can bring, Cafaro has really done a great job of limiting his fouls early on. And I think that's huge because when you've got Cafaro and you can bring Caden Shedrick off the bench, who is a, like, frankly, more dynamic player and scorer than Cafaro, though Cafaro is really good at what he does. Caden's just got, you know, he's a little bit more exciting. He's got more bounce. He is able to block shots at a high rate. He's able to finish. Yeah, he's got better hands than Cafaro. And so having two centers who do things very differently is really great because they can both come in and change up the game. And of course, you've got Gardner, who is, you know, he went 8 of 19 against Duke, 17 points, 8 rebounds, had a huge game, especially considering he was guarding Paolo Banchero for most of the game. And of course, they were doubling him a lot and doing some other stuff with Banchero. But Gardner was a big reason that Banchero had only one shot in the second half of the Duke game. And that was the heave off the side of the glass for the last shot. I really like how the bigs are playing together and how they're passing a lot. Cafaro's become a much better passer. Shedrick's been a great passer. And even Gardner has been a great passer on the inside too. Passing to each other, creating space. And, you know, Shedrick's finishes inside against Duke were just incredible. Him soaring for the half-court lob was one of my favorite moments of this year. Probably my favorite moment of this year was that dunk. That's a lie. The buzzer beater was my favorite moment. But but the half-court heave was incredible. And him also dunking on Paolo Banchero and then saying something to him as he walked down the court was pretty good too. I just think the team feels different when Shedrick is playing well and when Cafaro is playing like that tough, gritty UVA defense that I love.
Absolutely, man. And it's been great to see Shedrick kind of get his confidence, really grow into the mm-hmm. player he's becoming. Tony Bennett even said in the post game, he's like, you know, I think we saw Caden Shedrick grow up a little bit before us tonight. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy we've been waiting for. You know, he's been a breakout type player for the past year or two, mm-hmm. coming into the preseason at least. People thought, you know, he was going to have a breakout year. I thought he was really going to have a breakout year this year. It's been slower than we expected, but he's done a good job. And, you know, 8 for 8 against Duke is a big deal, especially the style of the points he had there as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think the bigs have been a big part of it. I would say, too, you know, you got to give credit to Kihei Clark and Reese Beekman as well. Yeah. You know, neither of them are really scorers, but both of them have made plays during this mini three-game stretch when it counted. You know, Kihei Clark has been, you know, he was terrific against Duke dishing to the big. Yeah. He was great. You know, he got the tie-up with the jump ball. That was big. Reese Beekman obviously hit the game winner. But to me, the play that almost stands out as much is when he I forget which Duke player had the ball, but he picked his pocket right under his own basket. Gets fouled, gets the and one. That was a huge play in the game because it was right when it felt like Duke was about to pull away with it at the end.
Yeah.
That game put Virginia right back in it. So both of them have been terrific dishing the ball, and we've just seen them make clutch plays. And Kihei Clark, for all the frustrations, you know, that people have with him, he makes great plays in big moments. And he's done that his whole career, and we're seeing Reese Beekman kind of carry a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, Kihei is clutch city. You think about Purdue, of course, stands out. He had the pass to Reese Beekman last year in the ACC tournament to beat Syracuse. He had the pass to Reese against Duke. He also had the pass to Tomas Woldetensai last year again, or 2 years ago. Was it last year or 2 years ago against Carolina when he hit it from the corner?
2 years ago.
Two years ago. It was right before COVID. That's right.
Yeah.
he had that kind of wraparound pass to Woldetensai in the corner. He also had that game-winning shot against Tech 2 years ago as well. He's clutch city. And, you know, Kihei, let's talk about him for a sec. He went 4 of 11 in this game, 8 points, but he had 9 assists, 2 steals, only 2 turnovers. He played really great defense against some guys that were just frankly bigger and more athletic than him. You know, Trevor Keels is just a massive muscle freshman. Like, he looks like he's 30, and he's probably, what, 19, 20? He's just a really big guy. A guy that Tony Bennett really wanted for a long time. You know, AJ Griffin's big. Wendell Moore is big. Duke's just got some big athletes on that team. Kihei, being undersized, you know, has learned to play in a role where he will sometimes give up certain shots, but he's smart about it. His leadership has just been great. You know, he, as the broadcast team said, Kihei was the only UVA player with experience playing in Cameron Indoor. So he was used to the chants and the Duke students and the atmosphere and the crowd, and no one else was. I think it's Kihei keeping everyone's head level that really, yeah, of course, along with the coaching staff and stuff, but Kihei being that calm presence on the court. He played 38 minutes. He basically played the whole game. You know, I think Kihei did a great job.
Yeah, he certainly did. He's averaging 35 minutes per game on the season, which is tops on the team. Reese Beekman, half a minute behind him, 34.5 mm-hmm. minutes. But yeah, you know, and to your point, Virginia, the UVA men's basketball Twitter page even did a little video basically diagramming every play you mm-hmm. said earlier today with the assists. And they were showing all his assists just throughout the week as well. So, yeah, Kihei is a big part of this team, you know, with his size and kind of admittedly the lack of talent around him compared to the championship team at mm-hmm. least. You know, there's going to continue to be frustrations with him at times. But I think as we've seen, you know, he's really grown into the role, and he does a great job at making plays when it counts. He's an incredibly critical piece of this team and a player they need. You know, if you're going to live through the bigs for a lot of your scoring, you got to have someone who can get him the ball, and that's what Kihei did a great job of against Duke. So anyway, the combination of those two things, you know, the interior inside the paint scoring, you know, you hope that's a trend that can continue. And you know, it didn't result in a ton of free throws against Duke, and we'll just kind of leave that conversation there. Mm-hmm. But hopefully in other games, it will lead to more free throws. And,
yeah,
you know, combine that with the fact that you have guards that are really good at distributing the ball, terrific on defense. You know, that's, you know, bringing this conversation full circle. That's the play that you see, and hopefully that will can continue over the final six games to allow UVA to make a run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think, you know, one thing, and I think this is a clear just decision by the coaching staff, is to not take threes and just really push the players to take what they're given inside. You know, we took 12 threes in this game, only made 2. Of course, we were 1 for 11 before the last shot, which is just not a very good percentage at all from making threes. I actually tweeted, and I got a lot of crap for this on Twitter, but I tweeted 1 of 11 with a sad face right before, and it was like, you know, with a minute left and Duke was shooting free throws, it was kind of like, dang, you know, if we could have made like one of those, if we could have made one extra three, you know, how that would have changed this game. And it's just not there. And I also tweeted that, you know, our 3-point shooting woes will keep us out of the NCAA tournament. And I also got a lot of crap for that, because of course Reese makes a three, you know, 5 minutes after I tweet that out. When, you know, I'm not going to walk it back. Like, that's true. If we miss the NCAA tournament this year, it's because we can't hit threes. And basically all of our losses, we have awful, awful three-point shooting. And a lot of times this team has ridden or died based on the shooting the three. And this game was an outlier, which I think stands out because we shot 2 of 12. That's 16.7%. That's awful. If a team's shooting that bad, you probably don't want them taking that last shot like that. You probably want to go for the tie. But all things considered, it was the right call. And we shot in this game about 60% from two, which is a really incredible stat considering all the athletes that Duke has on that team. And I think, I forget the exact amount, but I think we had about 50-something points in the paint. It was like 58.
It was like 52, I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that high.
It was something like that, but it was an incredible amount of points in the paint. Like not just like within the 3-point line, within the paint, it was over 50. And I don't remember the exact number, but it was just a lot. And I think this team, and one way this team can get there is by just making all their shots inside. If we don't have to take threes and we can still make more shots, then that's fine. We can win that way. But if this team latches on to the three again and just can't hit and keeps missing, then we will probably miss the NCAA tournament because this team has not shown any consistency with shooting the three. You know, we're looking at, you know, our best players right now shooting at, you know, around 37%. You know, Cody doesn't really shoot threes that often. He shoots 38%. Kihei shoots about 37.5. Reese is actually at 35.5, which is not too bad for him. But once again, he doesn't shoot a lot of threes. And then Armon, of course, shoots a ton of threes, shooting about 26%. So, you know, if we just can't hit those threes, then we're not going to make the tournament. But if this team pushes it inside more, like they did against Duke, I like our chances.
I mean, that's going to have to be the strategy. And, mm-hmm. you know, you get exceptions maybe once a month from Armon Franklin, mm-hmm. who will, you know, light up the scoreboard kind of as he did against Miami.
Exactly.
But, yeah, you know, that's not going to be the identity of this team. And you just have to hope that when it's time and when Virginia really, really needs to make a shot, you know, that they're able to kind of like they did against Duke. But, yeah, I mean, the 3-point shooting woes were rough, and especially earlier in the season, this team paid a price for it. When mm-hmm. you're not able to make that 3-ball, and earlier in the season, you have kind of Jaden Gardner adjusting to his new role on a new team at a higher level of competition, not to mention Cafaro and Caden Shedrick really, you know, not where they are right now. They had to grow into these roles throughout the season. So, yeah, Virginia did pay a price for lack of 3-point shooting, and they're not going to win any shootouts with teams either. But
no.
I think we know at this point the formula that has worked the past three games and probably is going to have to work over the next six for Virginia to make a run at the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's an uphill climb. That's what we talked about at the beginning of the episode. It's still an uphill climb. Virginia's not, you know, they're not on the bubble yet. They have a path to get there, but they're not there yet. So I think that's how they're going to ultimately have to get there, though, is continuing to rely on the interior scoring.
Yeah. So, Rob, what I'm doing right now is I'm looking at all of our losses and I'm seeing our 3-point percentage in each of the losses. This is a game. I'm making a game right now. we haven't played a game in a while, so I'm excited. I'm excited to see if you can get it.
All right.
In our losses, which game did we shoot the best percentage from the 3-point line? Which loss?
Which loss?
Yeah, which loss did we shoot the best from the 3-point line?
Man, I'll guess Navy just because. Actually, you know what? I'll go Iowa since that game was competitive.
Okay. Okay. That's close. We actually shot 47% from three in the Iowa game. But that is not the highest game of the season. I'll give you one more guess.
Let me say, I don't even remember. Maybe NC State?
NC State is the correct answer. We shot 58% from three against NC State. Now, of course, we only, we shot 17 threes, made 10. We just couldn't make any twos that game. That's the game where, Jaden went 5 of 12 and Armand went 4 of 10 from the field. So, and all of Armand's shots were from three. So, but yeah, and those are the two outliers that really stand out. The other one that stands out is North Carolina, where we made 50% of our threes. So it's not true all the time, but in the other losses, it's been pretty bad. Against Navy, it was 25%. Against Houston, it was 21%. Iowa was 47%. James Madison was an awful 15% from the three-point line. Clemson was 27%. North Carolina was 50%. Wake Forest was 38%. NC State was 58%. And Notre Dame was 21%. So if our team shoots just a little bit better in some of those games, like against JMU, for example, if we make one more shot, it's a different game. We probably aren't in the state. But the three-point shooting has really hurt us this season, especially in some of those closer games. You know, some of those games like North Carolina, the first Clemson game, Houston, making more threes probably isn't going to matter. But, who knows? Against Navy, if we make a couple more shots, against JMU, against Iowa, who knows what happens. So it is what it is. We can't go back in time. But it's just interesting how, this team has evolved from a team that was like, oh, let's just jack threes, to a team that's like, let's get it inside as much as we can.
Yeah, and I've said this before. I think it's a true testament to Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
Just the coaching jobs that he's had to do the past several years. Because, mm-hmm. When you think about it, even if Virginia doesn't make the tournament this year, going back to the championship team, this is, the fourth team now, if you include the championship team. So there's been four teams since then. And each one of them has been dramatically different in the way they've had to score, at least on the offensive end. And the championship team was very good, very balanced, and we know the talent level that was on that team. But then you go to the next year, and you're really lacking playmakers at guard, and they mm-hmm. were able to work with Momedy and Jay Huff and Braxton Key. And then the year after, it was still with the bigs, but it was different. The bigs were scoring. They were shooting. You had Jay Huff, Sam Hauser, and then Trey Murphy. And then this year has been kind of funneled back to the inside, but more of traditional bigs as opposed to, the more modern, the more stretch bigs like Jay Huff and Momedy 2 years ago. So anyway, win or lose, make the tournament or not, it has been really remarkable the way this team has had to remake itself over mm-hmm. the past several years. And, hopefully with the class coming in next year, I still expect that class is going to need probably a year to gel, just like the championship team, that class with Dre, who redshirted, of course, but Ty and Kyle, especially, that class needed a year to kind of gel as freshmen. I expect next year to be no different. But, hopefully with this new influx of talent coming in, hopefully for Tony Bennett's sake, he'll have more guys to work with and be able to get a system that he's able to run consistently for a few years. But just wanted to say that it really has been remarkable how his team has had to be remade and reworked for now four consecutive years.
Yeah. And, you're talking about, gelling and stuff. Jay Huff also redshirted that year too. People forget Jay Huff was part of that class with Ty and Kyle and Dre. And he, the differences in their paths were so amazing. But you're definitely right. The people coming in are not going to step in right away. It's very rare that a freshman, true freshman, plays significant minutes for a Tony Bennett team. I mean, you can look back to Malcolm Brogdon played significant minutes as a freshman before he got hurt. He broke his wrist and was out. Basically the whole season, and then redshirted and came back. You can look at Ty and Kyle, who played a lot their true freshman seasons, but at the beginning not so much, and they really started coming on later in the season. Think about Ty with that game against Villanova, where he almost won us the game at Villanova. that, you know, you can look at them. But really, it was their second year and, of course, their third year where they really gelled together and created one of the most fun teams to watch ever, for me at least. And I just think that this is going to be true for anyone coming in. And I think people just got to get used to it. People are going to complain no matter what Tony does. And I don't get it. You know, you can be frustrated with the shooting percentages. You can be frustrated with not getting foul calls. But, you know, Tony's doing his best. I think this year, especially in the Duke game, he was probably in the ref's face more than I've ever seen him. And this year, I think he's done he's tried harder to, make contact, not make contact, but tell the refs, look, you're missing calls and stuff like that. So I think he's trying this year, especially with this team. He's just seen some stuff. He knows when to push and when to hold back. And he knows when to change the offense and when to bring in a different offense. I think he's just an incredible coach. And I think that people who try to tell him to do different things from their couch are ridiculous, personally.
Yeah. So anyway, that's our meandering bubble talk and how we ended up here. You know, it is what it is. The one final thing I'll add, though, is I actually just finished reading the Intangible book that came out, kind of like the oral history. And, you know, it was a fun read. It's, you know, there's no real insights there that aren't really publicly known at this point.
Yeah.
But I will say the one thing that really was evident throughout is that it kind of gives a glimpse of Tony Bennett, the coach. And, you know, we kind of think of Tony Bennett as the nice guy who gives, you know, good interviews and is so thankful and humble and whatnot. But it does give a glimpse into how hard Tony Bennett works and how data-driven and metric-driven and, you know, just everything from the details of how he plans practices and whatnot. So anyway, I did think that was really interesting while just we're on that subject, is getting a little glimpse into that side of Tony Bennett, that side that you assume exists, but you don't really get that good a view of from our perspective. Mm-hmm. So that helps him a lot.
That's a great point. You know, it's just, you know, we don't see what everyone, like what people behind the scenes see with him. We see the stoic coach on the sideline, looks good in sneakers and a sweater. And, you know, against Duke, he got in the refs' faces a couple times. Of course, Williford got teed up in the Duke game. It was double techs on both benches. But, you know, this staff works really hard, and they've done a great job with this team, I think, making them or helping them to believe that they could actually win this game. A lot of people wrote them off, us included. And I'm looking forward to seeing if they can make that push to the tournament. I think they can. I think they just need to keep playing the way that they have been.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly makes the final stretch more intriguing. You know, Georgia Tech is more of a hold your breath game, like just don't mess it.
Yeah.
But it certainly raises the stakes for the Virginia Tech game, especially in Castle, and, you know, for each of the following games thereafter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it adds a level of drama and intrigue, which is always fun. You know, anytime you have a chance to compete like that, it makes the season more fun.
It does. And, you know, we've got some games coming up again on national TV. You know, we got Georgia Tech, even Georgia Tech's on national TV. It's on ESPN2 at 4 on Saturday. Virginia Tech, big Monday game, ESPN, 7 o'clock, primetime. It's going to be really fun. Hopefully we can pull it out. Miami is on ACC Network, which is whatever, and that's at 5 on that Saturday. And then playing Duke again at home, 7 p.m. ESPN on that Wednesday. And then Florida State and Louisville have not been determined yet. I think they're just seeing how bad those teams actually are before they assign a time slot and a TV slot. Probably, my guess is both of those will be on ACC Network at some point.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Sports Drink. Today's episode of Guys and Ties is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or on social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open up Instagram and type in @sportsdrink. It's spelled like sports drink without the vowel. So if you're going to Instagram, @sportsdrink, all we ask is that you close the door behind you. We're trying to not let the funk out. With that, Rob, are you ready to talk some football? I know you've been itching to. Lots of news coming out. What have you got for us? What are we diving into today?
Yeah, well, we're kind of in the discovery process of the new coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hires got made. The national signing day was a couple weeks ago. They brought in their guys, and you know, it was more of a, you know, admittedly a bit more of a salvage job with that class, you know, trying to clean up the class. I mean, I think a year or two ago, I don't know if we had anyone that signed on the late signing day. And mm-hmm. this year we had like 8 or 9 people that signed on late signing day.
Yeah.
So, you know, they put the class together. Yesterday we got to hear from Des Kitchens, the offensive coordinator. Tomorrow, Friday, we will hear from John Rudzinski, the defensive coordinator. So we're kind of in the discovery phase. And I know I have a couple things that we could just touch on briefly. But, Dustin, I don't know, like, you know, Coach Elliott has been around for, mm-hmm. what, about a month and a half at this point. And the coaching staff has been in place for, you know, call it 3 weeks or so. You know, do you have any initial impressions of this staff? And, you know, maybe how they're different, better, worse, you know, whatever, than kind of how the previous staff was.
So what I'll say to that is, in all honesty, I know you've been doing a lot of research and a lot of looking into some deep dives into some of these coaches, and I have not. However, I do like some of the moves that they've done. I love that they kept 2J and Hagans. I love that Hagans has also been promoted to associate head coach. I think he deserves it. I think that he's been with this program for so long. He's really important to it. And he's important for not just recruiting purposes, but he's also, honestly, been one of the best position coaches in football over the past couple of years with the jobs that he's done with this receiving core. You know, Dontavian Wicks, Lavelle Davis had a breakout year, but, you know, marred by injuries and COVID. But, you know, that wide receiver group that we had last year and even this year is fantastic. And none of that happens without the work that he did. So I love that he's getting recognized for that. Just some of the things that I've heard and read. You sent me a link. I think it was you. You sent me, or someone sent me a link to a Saber article that listed some of the things that are going to happen to, or changes that are going to be made within the program. You know, talking about V Sabers on both sides of the helmet. I like that coming back. The jersey number picking is gone. You know, I don't really care about that. I don't mind. But it seems like Elliott and staff are pretty much all business. And it's not like, you know, it's not, you know, there's not like earn this, earn that. It's like you're here to win, and we're going to start winning now. And so I'm looking forward to seeing some other, not changes, and like I don't really mind the way Bronco did things, but it'll be interesting to see what Elliott does with some of the other aspects of the program. You know, like, do we continue to break the rock anymore? Like, that was kind of cool under Bronco, but I don't know if Elliott wants to do that. You know, I heard that the Wahoo Walk is coming back, or what is it called? Cavalier Crawl?
I think it's Wahoo Walk, maybe. But essentially when the team comes into the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah.
And giving a chance to the fans to see them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, he was saying that they would be suit and tie for that. So I'm not sure what I expected, but I'm not sure I expected that as much. And of course, I didn't know much about Tony Elliott before he was hired, but I'm looking forward to seeing what other changes are being made. And of course, you know, new things are kind of exciting when it comes to football, and you know, it's a new era kind of for UVA. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. Rob, what about you? I know you've done a lot more deep dives and research. How is this coaching staff looking to you right now? And what are some things that you like or dislike about what they're doing?
Sure. And, you know, to your point, even before diving in that, I think it's a great observation you made. And honestly, I think the way Tony Elliott is setting up this program is more in the mold of a traditional college football program. Mm-hmm. I think what we saw with Bronco is that there were a lot of things that he did that a lot of other programs didn't do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think so much of that was really trying to turn the program around. He did a lot of similar things, you know, that were unique when he was at BYU. Mm-hmm. The difference there was that he turned around BYU when he was the coach there after 2 or 3 years. And then those traditions kind of maintained themselves throughout the rest of his tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to UVA, but he really brought those in as a way to reestablish a culture. And, you know, the way Tony Elliott describes it is that Bronco brought in a winning culture, and now it's his job to bring in a championship culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the way he frames that, you know, especially with his experience at Clemson.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think you're spot on with that. I think, you know, we've touched on this before. This staff is assembled, again, more like a traditional college football staff. There's people pulled from, you know, different parts of the country. You know, obviously he retained Hagans, 2J, and Centum, but the rest of the staff kind of came from varying places, be it Air Force, Army, Navy, the Atlanta Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of piecing that together. And they come in and they're kind of molding a scheme as they go. You know, and with the offense, at least, you know, they had to, under Anai and Bronco, they had to adjust to the personnel they had. But we always knew that the end game was essentially what we saw this past season. The end game was going to be an air raid type of scheme, and one with tempo if they could sustain it.
Mm-hmm.
And defensively, you know, it was similar. You know, it was a little different because they had an identity, but they eventually molded into the scheme they wanted all along, the 3-3-5. It just didn't go well, and that last year, and Bronco and staff, you know, obviously didn't have the chance to see it through.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's different philosophies here, and I say all that because on offense, they're gonna have to mold an offense together. And we know what the offense that Tony Elliott likes. It's more of a power spread scheme, you know, the Chad Morris, the Gus Malzahn mold. But we're gonna see how, you know, Des Kitching mixes in his experience. And he talked mm-hmm. about that the other day, his experience on the Falcons, and, you know, look for the way they use Cordell Patterson to be similar to the way we use Keaton Thompson. And
mm-hmm.
same thing, he talked about Matt Canada, who was previously at Pittsburgh, and their use of sweeps. So expect to see that element to the offense added. So the offense is kind of molding itself together. And the defense, I actually had a chance to watch a little bit of Air Force over the past couple of days, just their film from this past season. And, you know, it's a hybrid scheme. You know, it's a 3-4 scheme. They actually ran a lot of 3-3-5 there. The difference being the 3-3-5 wasn't a stack like we played this past year. It was more having that fourth guy on the line of scrimmage at all times. So it's interesting. You know, we're seeing the type of players they're recruiting. They're recruiting a lot, and not only recruiting, but in the transfer portal, they're recruiting a lot of, you know, traditional 4-3 type defensive ends, those mm-hmm. five technique guys. So the scheme is going to be hybrid. It's really a matter of, you know, is it going to be a three-man front? If it's a three-man front, is there going to be another guy on the line of scrimmage that's essentially the fourth man? You know, that'll work itself out. But we really don't have a good feel yet on what this scheme is going to look like, really on either side of the ball. We have guesses, and we know what elements will be incorporated, but we we're far from a finished product. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm excited for spring ball to get underway to see how that starts to flesh itself out.
Exactly. I think as we get closer to spring ball, we'll get some more of those tradition things as well. Like, you know, there's been some talk about maybe there's going to be some slight uniform changes. I've heard some things about maybe some orange helmets, you know, things that we haven't had in the past. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what Tony Elliott and co do to really get people excited to come back to Scott Stadium. Cause like, you know, frankly, in the past couple of years, you know, you can blame COVID all you want. And I'm sure that has something to do with it, but you know, frankly, there had the attendance level has been pretty weak, especially for how exciting this past team was with what they were doing and what Brennan was doing, even up to when he got injured at BYU, and you know, it was a rough couple games. But I think that it'll go well with Elliott. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do, and you know, looking forward to seeing how he rebuilds this program, especially because you know, with signing day and a lot of our offensive line going and bringing in more offensive linemen, it's going to be really interesting this year to see how all these new players and coaches and strategies mesh with each other.
Absolutely. And, you know, they're in a good spot on offense in the sense that they have Brennan Armstrong coming back, but there's a lot of position battles, you know, outside of the passing game that need to be worked out. And, you know, like I said, Brennan Armstrong, they have good, very good wide receivers to work with. But running back, is that something that Mike Collins is going to run away with? Or, you know, maybe Ahmad Faustin has something to say about that. That's a position battle to watch. Mm-hmm. As you said, offensive line, you know, good luck guessing right now what the starting five is going to be, because there's two new transfers. There's a bunch of freshmen. You know, there's guys that have been on the roster but haven't played that much. You know, good luck naming that starting five. That's going to be incredibly interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about the front seven, that's going to be dependent on scheme. And, you know, some of these linebackers, do they become defensive ends? You know, we're going to have to monitor that a little bit. And the secondary, I mean, I think aside from Anthony Johnson, I think all those spots are open. I think the safety position is going to be a great position battle. Mm-hmm. You know, I think corner outside of Anthony Johnson will also be a good position battle. So, I mean, there's a lot of storylines to follow this spring, you know, personnel wise. And then, like you said, it's kind of the cultures he's going to look to establish at UVA. And, you know, he sounds like we're getting rid of the number draft. You know, personally, I love V-Savers on both sides of the helmet. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to bring that in. You know, I'll admit I've never loved the orange helmets. We wore them once with Bronco. We wore them a few times with Mike London. Those weren't my favorite, but sounds like, you know, there's going to be some uniform tweaks, whatever they may be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another thing to watch. So, yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, as I've said before, I think Bronco did great things for this program. But I think Tony Elliott coming in now, there's a lot to be excited about, and it's a different way of doing things, but I think he's maintaining the UVA culture. And I think very similar to how Bronco was, he knows what type of culture is possible at UVA. And I think he understands how he needs to work around that and use that as a strength.
Yeah.
And his idea of the model program, you know, that he's been talking about, and the quality of the assistants that he's brought in, you know, at least in terms of character and, you know, the backgrounds that they have, but, you know, it's aligns with what UVA is as an institution. So I think he gets that part. And yeah, now that we're kind of through a lot of the hires, you know, they're starting to set their foundational principles. We're going to be able to start football talk pretty soon, you know, actually on the field talk. So it's exciting to follow, at least. And, you know, I think everyone is cheering for Tony Elliott. Seems like a great person, and certainly excited to see what he can do during his tenure here.
Yeah, it'll be great, and I'm looking forward to it as well. And I know people are excited and looking for it. It just seems like he comes from a winning culture, you know, and he does. He comes from Clemson, who has been very successful in his offense, even though, you know, he had some struggles with Ugo Lele this past season, you know, in the past with Trevor Lawrence. It's been outstanding. And so I'm looking forward to see what he does. Maybe we have a run game next year. That's exciting to think about. You know, it's just interesting to see what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. So I'm looking forward to it. Rob, any last thoughts or things that you're looking for? Yeah, I know you've talked a little bit about it, but one thing besides spring game that you're looking forward to seeing what this coaching staff does?
Man, put me on the spot like that.
I know.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious how the roles are on defense. And, you know, aside from kind of what you talked about there, what I'm really intrigued by with this staff is it's kind of unusual how it's set up. You have a defensive tackles coach, you have a defensive ends coach, you have a linebackers coach.
Mm-hmm.
So that front seven is kind of interesting. You know, I'm not quite sure how they're going to split the, you know, make the distinction between tackles and ends, especially if they do run more traditional 3-4 schemes. I'm curious if Chris Slade will work with edge rushers, mm-hmm. or, you know, if Clint Centum just gets all the linebackers. I'm curious how that plays itself out. And I think there's going to be more storylines to follow, but that's one thing I'm going to kind of keep an eye on when spring practice starts. Spring practice starts here. I believe it's March 15th. March 22nd. So that's something I'm going to start to keep an eye on as we get closer to the on-the-field football itself.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Rob, any last word on football or basketball?
Let's beat Georgia Tech, man.
Let's beat Georgia Tech. I think with that, we're pretty much done. Thanks for listening. This is the Guys and Ties podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and is patient with us when we don't do it regularly, but you know, it's a passion, not a job for now.
We'll don't pay the bills yet.
Yeah, we'll see. we'll see what happens. Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Guys and Ties Pod. Make sure to follow us on Snapchat and Instagram at Guys and Ties Pod for all that bonus content. Go ahead and follow us on Spotify or iTunes if you like what you hear and you want to keep listening to us. And we'll see you guys next time. Go Hoos. Be Georgia Tech.
Go Hoos.